This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow producing, and our guest is Alex Martin, the news editor for the Wall Street Journal. Alex is a person who's been around the block a few years. He spent most of his career in New York City with the Wall Street Journal and with Newsday, and prior to that was with the Times-Picayune. Worked for the newspaper in St. Francisville after graduating from LSU, where he was editor of the Reveille in 1981, and I was his sports editor. So he's had a long and distinguished career, the pride of Holy Cross High School in the great city of New Orleans. And good morning to you, Alex Martin.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Doing well. Nice to talk with you. A few days ago, as in August 1st, Russia freed the wrongly convicted Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich as part of the largest and most complex East-West prisoner swap since the Cold War, in which he and more than a dozen others jailed by the Kremlin were exchanged for Russians held in the U.S. and Europe, including a convicted murderer. And Gershkovich was falsely accused of being a spy, and it looked like he might spend many, many years. He was convicted in Russia and sentenced to a long prison sentence, and he ultimately was freed shortly thereafter in a surprise move. And Alex, I know nobody was happier than the staff at the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it had become, an obsession over the 491 days that he was in captivity, because he was just performing the job that all of these people do every day, which is journalism. And he was not a spy. He wasn't doing anything nefarious. He was just going to meet a source at a steakhouse.
It was a case in which it was anticipated he would be in captivity for much longer, as in years longer. How surprising was the development when you heard it?
Well, there had been occasions when it looked like there might be something starting, and they never quite reached fruition. I mean, we later learned that, for example, there was a grand bargain that was being struck that would have freed Alexei Navalny, but Navalny died in captivity, and it would have involved a big exchange of prisoners, and Evan would have been one of those. So it was over some time. There was some inkling that because trials had been moved up for Evan and for some other folks and who were being held, the NPR editor who was being held, that maybe something was afoot, but things were, because of prior talks falling through, folks tried to keep it optimism down a bit. So it was surprising how quickly it came together. But not that there was some smoke there.
877-217-5757 is your number. And Alex is the news editor of the Wall Street Journal. And my friend Jim Nickel, the lobbyist, former head of the Democratic Party in Louisiana, he often comments about how good the paper is, and you have stories that nobody else does. And that's what journalism is largely about, finding stories others don't have. And if today you were to look at the front pages of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, the stories are different, which is good. And we are 85 days from an election, and as we get closer to the finish line, we're going to have some replication, but different slants. And how competitive is the environment in the newspaper world right now, Alex?
Well, I mean, there's newspapers, and then there's just news in general. And news in general, it's never been more competitive because you have more outlets. And frankly, the traditional outlets are more disadvantaged than they were under when it was just newspapers, before you had the web being the dominant platform. So you have a lot of people who can break news. You have a lot of people out there floating information and misinformation that you have to sift through and react to. And there's a lot more because of social media. There's a lot more pressure from interest groups and from candidates and their backers about the way things are covered. And you have to you could try to ignore that, and I think that's wrong, but you can't be febrile and react every second to every complaint. So you have to try to sift through those kind of things. So it is competitive, and it is a changing landscape. And of course, we like to beat the New York Times and the Washington Post, and the New York Times and the Washington Post like to beat us, and all of that's great. But our focus and our editor, who's been here now for about a year and a half, Emma Tucker, drums into our head every day that for each platform that we provide news on, whether it's our newswire or our website or the newspaper, we have to think about the audience that's looking for this and what they want from us, and not in terms of the how we to pander to them, but in terms of the what kinds of needs we need to meet for them, and that's really the only way we can be effective.
877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. And a listener asks about the Murdochs who own the Wall Street Journal. And I don't think, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the show, I don't think there's any real evidence of any interference in what you're doing. Now, the editorial pages are conservative, just as in the New York Times are liberal, but I think sometimes, Alex, people get those confused. They think that a newspaper is, quote, liberal in everything or conservative in everything based on what they read on the editorial pages. That's really not the case, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, look, the Wall Street Journal was conservative before Rupert owned it, right? If everybody try to remember back to Vince Foster and the conspiracy theory that he didn't really kill himself in the Clinton administration, that was fostered and propagated by the Wall Street Journal editorial pages when it was owned by somebody completely different. Now, nobody in the news, I wasn't working here then, but no one in the news pages of the Wall Street Journal wrote a story that said that. So, the editorial page, I never see, the folks who work for that, except when I'm walking from the sixth floor where my news office is, to the third floor to buy food in the canteen, right? That's when I see them.
Well, you've got Fox in the same building, but...
Yes, I see those folks there too.
Yeah. But David Spahn, who used to work here as a reporter for WAFB Channel 9, he's been reporting for Fox, and he's like you. You know, he's just covering the news, but he gets associated with people like Hannity and Laura Ingraham, and it's a totally different animal. And I think it's an even bigger, bigger problem for television journalists who are accused of mouthing the opinions expressed by the hosts, and whether they work for MSNBC or Fox or some other network.
So one of my old colleagues here and at Newsday, Rebecca Blumenstein, is the president of NBC News Editorial. And, the folks who work over there, the people who are straight news reporters are not particularly thrilled that their objectivity is questioned because of the existence of MSNBC. But it is what it is, and they do their jobs. Just like we do here.
But we are headed for a likely contested election again. If things go according to expectations, it will be close, which means if it's close, and certainly if Donald Trump doesn't win, he will contest the election. That will, of course, be a time in which media will be watched closely, and for good reason.
Sure. I mean, we can only do what we can do, right? Which is go out, report stories, try to make sure that we aren't being led on or we're sober-sided, and you know, there's a misapprehension that balance is symmetry. No, you don't have to have exactly the same story on each side, but you do have to represent both things that are going on. So, I mean, look, the last challenge before the January 6th riot or insurrection, depending on the term of art that you choose, there were all of the challenges. They were all rejected by courts, by judges of all stripes. We covered those challenges. We didn't get dragged down a dead end. And
we're going to take a short break and return after this quick pause with more from Alex Martin. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF, and Alex Martin is our guest, the news editor for the Wall Street Journal, who is a Louisiana native, and he took New York by storm, won a couple of Pulitzers, and he is with us to talk about the lay of the land. 85 days from the election, 12 weeks from tomorrow, and even though the players in the election are pretty well known. Kamala Harris has been vice president for almost 4 years, and Donald Trump has been on the world scene long before he became a candidate. And for the last 9 years, Alex, our friend Lester Duay, says he's lived rent-free in America's mind for 9 straight years. Those who love him, those who loathe him, they can't stop thinking and talking about him. And he is, of course, the pivotal figure in this election. He drives turnout. Last time we had high turnout, and it was, I think, because people wanted to vote for him and against him. And he quite likely will be the focus of the campaign in the home stretch. But in the last few weeks, Kamala Harris has been largely the focus, which I'm sure drives Donald Trump crazy. But to show how things can change, Trump was shot on July 13th. That's not even a month. Tomorrow will be 1 month. And it looked for a brief shining moment for him and the Republicans that he was on his way to winning the presidency and perhaps winning it comfortably. And then 8 days later, Joe Biden gets out of the race on July 21st. That's only 22 days ago. And the first odds showed Trump a 30-point lead over Harris as the prospective winner of the 2024 election. Today, as in August 12th, Harris is at 52% and Trump at 46%. What the heck happened, Alex Martin?
I haven't a clue. And I think that a little humility on the part of the political press would be refreshing. because like, look, this is unprecedented stuff that has happened. And we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure it out in an environment in which polling is pretty... I'm not one of these people who says polling isn't accurate, but polling isn't as accurate as it used to be because of the ways of, you know, because of non-response, the ways to reach people, all of that stuff, right? So, and then when you look at a national race, a race for president, you know, you can have a national poll, but Democrats have to outpoll Republicans by a pretty good margin for that to translate into an electoral college victory. And then the electoral college polls that are done, the swing state polling that's done, the margin of error in those is much greater than the national margin of error. So even though you might see Kamala Harris leading in that, she's still within the margin of error. And by the way, at the time Joe Biden dropped out, Joe Biden was in the margin of error in many of those, within the margin of error in many of those polls. So what the heck happened? What's going to happen? I don't know.
877-217-5757. And Hal in Monroe notes that Trump will rue the day that he agreed to an early debate with Joe Biden. If he had not done that, he would likely be facing Biden on November 5th, and it is odd that the one debate that Trump clearly won, he may have ended up losing the presidency because of that if things turn out the way they're predicted to right now.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, and the thing that Biden's disastrous performance also masked was Trump didn't have that great a debate. You know, I mean, if you didn't have the guy next to him who was, you know, basically pouring gasoline on himself and lighting a match, Trump's debate was not, you know, he exhibited all of the things that make him a polarizing figure, which, you know, his inability to tell the truth consistently, and he was a little bit disjointed on some of his answers, which is getting worse now. That being said, look, he did come out. The other guy looked awful, and if that had happened on September 10th, I think is when the next debate's supposed to be. So if that had happened on September 10th, he's going to be the president, unless a meteor hits.
Well, now it's a horse race, and there will be at least one debate, maybe as many as three. But Kamala Harris, and this is a fair question from Tom on Bluebonnet about why she's not doing any press conferences or even any interviews. And I think right now it's working pretty well the way it is. But will that change, or will she be playing dodgeball down the stretch? How do you view it?
I can't imagine that she won't take questions at some point or find an interviewer or interviewers that she's comfortable with. You know, she does pop over to the press line, gets asked a few questions. I wish there were better questions that got asked. Wow. But it's a lot harder when it just kind of happens unexpectedly. So, I think she's going to have to do it, but I think she's going to do it on her own terms, like every candidate does. They only do it when they need us.
What was your impression of Trump's, former President Trump's press conference last week?
Well, that was a bit rambling, and I don't think it met what the people who advise him hope they would have him do, which is, you know, be more focused, point out the things they believe about that, you know, will work in differentiating him from Kamala Harris and in slowing her momentum. And, you know, he again descended into many of the things, you know, the self-interest, the election denial, you know, the whole story about the helicopter ride with Willie Brown. That wasn't a helicopter ride with Willie Brown. That wasn't in California. That, you know, wasn't anything about what he said. All of those kinds of things, that's not great for him. You know, the one thing that it did for him is he was there for 90 minutes, and it allows them to say, hey, he took questions for 90 minutes, and he's up there taking questions, and the other candidate isn't. But that's not nearly where that could have been for him if he had been focused and disciplined, which are two words that are not usually associated with the candidate.
Well, James Carville, of course, doesn't like Donald Trump, and I suspect the feeling is mutual. He was on our show a few days ago, and he's saying Trump is losing it. Now, I'm not surprised to hear Trump or Carville say that, but here's a headline in yesterday's New York Times: Trump circle sees a disoriented man losing grip of his bid. Carville went so far as to say it's 5-2 that Trump uses the N-word by election day. He has, according to stories yesterday in the New York Times, according to sources they did not name, but they did say they had sources, has been privately calling Kamala Harris the B word. Now, sometimes when we say things in private and we get wound up in public, we end up repeating what we've said in private, and some things are better off left unsaid to the masses, especially when you're trying to be elected president of the United States. But Trump is he's an aberration. He does things nobody else has done and gets away with it, Alex.
he has done things that nobody else has ever done, and he has so far gotten away with it. What he's going to do, how he's going to react, is he going to be able to rein in his emotions? I mean, history tells us that he hasn't had a lot of success at that. Will it go far beyond what it's already been to the regions that you've just mentioned? Who knows? I don't think so. But
well,
I've been wrong about him consistently for 9 years.
The debates will be must hear radio, and if you're so inclined, must see TV, because if ever there were a contrast between the two candidates for president, we'll have it with Kamala Harris and Donald John Trump. And Harris will certainly have more energy than Biden displayed, and we'll see what happens. But Trump is a seasoned debater now. We'll talk about this and more when we return. And go to the phone lines, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and Alex Martin with us for a few more minutes, the news editor of the Wall Street Journal in downtown New York City. Gotham City, the hometown of Donald John Trump, who right now is in a horse race that will likely go to the finish line as a photo finish or close to it for the presidency of the United States. The election's 12 weeks from tomorrow, and a listener asks about the vice presidential choices, and usually vice presidential choices have minimal impact on the outcome of an election, but Trump chose J.D. Vance. And by the way, I did note that the New York Times, or I did see that the New York Times best-selling list, his book is the best-selling book in the country now. Again, Hillbilly Elegy, and it was once before. So he's selling lots of books by being the vice presidential nominee, and he'll make a lot of money. So God bless J.D. Vance for doing it the American way. But Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, the Democratic candidate, spoke in a 2018 video about weapons of war that he went on to say, I carried in war. And as it turns out, he never fought in a war, although he did serve 24 years in the armed forces, and neither Trump nor Harris served in the armed forces. And J.D. Vance was a Marine. He was a journalist, but he went in a war zone, and God bless him for doing that as well. But this give and take about vice presidential choices, Alex, is it just noise, or will it really matter?
I mean, as you said in the introduction to this question, I mean, it hasn't proven in history to be a very big mover of votes, right? So, I don't know. I mean, a lot of this debate over people's veteran status feels like how many angels can dance on the head of a pin to me. I mean, you know, it just sort of, they both served. We should respect that. They both seem to have done what was asked of them. I don't think anybody really, is within the context of, within the larger context of political campaigns, I don't think anybody's really been, you know, misrepresented anything. I wish we were talking about something else. I am interested in, you know, what J.D. Vance thinks about lots of things, you know. And Walz's record as governor.
Well, as we saw in 2004, when John Kerry, a legitimate war hero, was swift voted, and George Bush, who never showed up for his guard duty in Alabama, was put on an equal or perhaps superior level as far as a patriot, it might have made the difference in the election. If Kerry had won in Ohio, he would have been the president, and he lost there by 100,000 votes. So this extraneous stuff often plays well, and that's why political consultants encourage your candidates to go there. But you're right. That press conference with Trump last week, though, the questions asked were in some cases good, but in other cases bizarre. And I think we may have talked about it. The Wall Street Journal broke that story about former President Trump getting $10 million from Egypt, basically.
No, that was the Washington Post.
Okay. It was the Washington Post.
To be fair.
Yeah, it was the Washington Post. I meant to say the Washington Post, but I said the Wall Street Journal. But they had a Post reporter there, I'm sure. That question wasn't asked. I wonder why, Alex.
I haven't the foggiest idea. I mean, the reporter who was there probably wasn't one of the reporters on it. You know, look, I get tired of questions about the horse race. Could we ask questions about, you know, there was a good question from Garrett Hake, I guess his name is, with NBC News, about the abortion pill, right? And Trump either maybe didn't hear him or didn't know the name of the drug or whatever, but he gave a word salad answer. I wish somebody had been able to come back and say and ask him more questions, try to clarify, to get down. Press conference settings are not great for that, but again, I just would like to know more about that kind of stuff. And to return to the Kerry thing, you know, those are two people at the top of the ticket. These are two guys at the secondary level of the ticket. So that's why I don't think it matters as much. Also, the thing that's interesting, of course, is they got one of the people running Trump's campaign was one of the people behind the swift voting of John Kerry, Chris Lacevito.
Yeah, and for those of us who treasure patriotism, and I've always said that if everything's dead even and one person served in the military heroically and the other didn't, well, then that sways my decision. But things generally are not dead even. And Bill Clinton beat a war hero, and two of them, Bush and Bob Dole. And younger Bush beat John McCain, who was a war hero, and Obama beat McCain, and Bush beat Kerry. So we haven't really made that a high priority in electing presidents. But Dan downtown, we're going to the phone lines. Dan, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, sir, with Alex Martin.
Yes, Mr. Martin. Does Trump getting away with so much because the MAGA attitude of white supremacy, bigotry against third world immigrants and gay people, and the macho gun-toting, just so prevalent?
That's a leading question, counselor, but Alex, is that the Trump base, the people who are, quote, afraid of others who might not be in agreement with them politically or look like them as far as their ethnicity? Is that fair?
There are probably some people within the base who are. What the number is, I don't know. But do I think that there is here's how I'm going to answer it. The campaign clearly plays to our fears, whatever those fears are, right? That's what's been striking about the Harris campaign is that Biden was trying to play to other sets of fears, right? She's wrapped it in a more smiley, freedom, joy kind of wrapping that makes it an interesting contrast to the America's Going Down the Hole campaign run by Trump. And so, look, the question wasn't a question, it was a statement by a caller. So he's always entitled to his opinion.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on with Alex Martin.
Hey, good morning. So you guys were talking about BP picks. There's many that have the opinion that Kamala avoided nominating Josh Shapiro because of his Jewish background. She didn't want to alienate the Palestinian voters. Do you think that's going to stop Jewish voters who traditionally, a lot of them, vote Democrat?
All right. Well, the Jewish voters, by the way, it's Kamala, not Kamala. Jewish voters are fewer than 1% of the overall vote in the United States. So, and she is married to a Jewish man. So, and Jewish voters generally, although not monolithically, but generally vote Democratic. Alex, your response, please.
I don't think Kamala Harris did it for that reason. I think there's a complex decision matrix in these things, right? And also, I think she just, there's been reporting by others, not by our paper, but who said they just liked each other, you know? So
that's important.
Yeah, and there's also been reporting by others that said that Shapiro was having second thoughts about, do I really want to be second banana, or do I want to stay here, be governor, get a record, and then, you know, in 8 years, if Harris wins, run to succeed her.
But he would have, of course, taken it. But these vice presidential candidates, though, Alex, they're vetted more than the presidential candidates. It is interesting that they go through medical records, they go through all kinds of past actions, statements, and we really don't vet the people at large vet presidential candidates, but quite often they don't get that kind of close scrutiny. For example, I don't know that Harris or Biden or Trump, Biden had a physical, but it was incomplete, and Trump had many when he was in office that didn't reveal things, and I don't know about Harris, but these vice presidential candidates, they have to show everything they've got.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, those of us old enough to remember Tom Eagleton, know why.
Yeah.
because he had shock treatment. Let's see about replacing him. So that's not...
right after McGovern, who I loved. I love that guy, but I'm behind you 1,000%, not 100.
Well, there you go. It was a math problem.
All right, David in Atlanta.
There was another war hero.
Yeah, I know who he Distinguished Flying Cross. He was a great man, and the thanks he got was to carry one state, and he was in South Dakota. David in Atlanta. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Fox News Channel has constantly said Kamala Harris has done nothing as border czar. The truth of the matter is, she helped implement a program, an economic program for Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, that created economic opportunities for the citizens of those countries, and far fewer of those people left to cross the border. It's cut back the border crossings a lot. Furthermore, Kamala Harris helped negotiate the bipartisan Senate deal, which would have done a lot to alleviate the border problem.
All right. Well, that's going to be an issue. The border, immigration, and polls show that Trump, whether you like it or not, David, he is his position on immigration and the border is favored by more people than not. So, Alex, is that going to be? We're going to hear more and more and more about the borders being unprotected and millions of illegals coming in the U.S. and voting. And voting, by the way, according to Mike Johnson. Actually voting. We'll pick up with that. We've got to go to a break, but we'll send Alex into overtime for a few minutes after. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Tuck, Louisiana. We're in the last quarter hour, a few more minutes with Alex Martin, the news editor of the Wall Street Journal, who's been kind enough to stay with us. And we're talking about national politics, as I suspect we are. And I've noted in Louisiana twice as many people voted in the presidential election of 2020 than in the governor's race in 2023. And Tip O'Neill, he said all politics is local, Alex. I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. We're really energized by what's happening in other places in the country. And I think it's the Trump effect. He is one of those captivating figures who has captured the fancy of many Americans and caught the ire of many others. And until he leaves the scene, he may be good for turnout, but it's probably not good for uniting the country. But where do you see us right now as a country when we say we're divided and we can't get along and we're headed for another disastrous action comparable to 1-6? Are we really there, or is this just noise that can be discarded?
I think it would be foolish to disregard it, because who thought what happened on January 6th was going to happen? I mean, I just remember we were still working from home. I just remember sitting watching it on television while trying to edit the next day's newspaper and just being gobsmacked. I couldn't process it at first, what was happening, because, you know, to me, the peaceful transfer of power is the most, one of the most foundational aspects of American democracy. It's one of the things to laud and celebrate George Washington over almost above all else. So with that as predicate, and with the continued playing to the base election that we have, and the polarization of people, and the lack of a unifying belief in any sort of thing that a media tells us, and being almost through social media, be able to choose your own adventure on what is reality. Yeah, I'm concerned. I hope that you know, the institutions which saved us after 2020, like things like the courts that went before, demanded actual evidence as opposed to feelings and vibes, continue
well,
to
there's,
do that.
Well, there's really no evidence in this stuff about illegals voting. Why would somebody who just entered this country want to go down and register to vote? That's a good way to get caught, by the way, and it just is not happening, but it sounds good to some people. But anyway, we got five people. Robin's going to try to get two in, and then we go to Stephen Smith, who's been at the Olympics in Paris. But Jason in Jones Creek. Jason, quickly, you're on with Alex. Go for it.
Yes, sir. Good morning. It's just a comment about our presidential elections, and regardless of who the candidate is or who the party is, I guess as a Louisiana voter, it still always infuriates me that people in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania are undecided at this point when we know exactly who these two people are that are running for president. So that's just my comment.
All right, well, I don't know that they're any more undecided than anybody else. It's just that they have an equal number of people who are decided. And so these millions, in fact, that Georgia race a few years ago between Warnock and Walker was a billion-dollar Senate race. Millions, if not billions of dollars, will be poured into those swing states, Alex, to get to about 5% of the electorate that is undecided. And that's just where we are with the Electoral College.
Well, there's that, and there's also to get out the base, too, right? Those
That's
are the two
true.
Things that they're trying to do. So it's a very complicated a procedure in those places. But, yeah, just look at how few people it took to win Arizona.
All right, Robin, who do we take next? Last caller for Alex. Please be brief. James in Metairie. Hello, James.
Well, hi, Jim. Good morning to your guest also. I'm still smiling at that photograph of J.D. Vance in drag at Yale Law School in 2012 on the Drudge Report front page. But Frank Luntz, Republican pollster, said over the weekend, it seems that the people like Kamala Harris much more than they like Donald Trump, and that's what's hurting him in the polls. Thanks, Jim.
All right. It's Kamala, by the way. Kamala. But Alex, you and I know you had a little bit of a fancy, probably not as much as I did, for professional wrestling. I remember Kamala, the Ugandan warrior, who spelled his name the same way. But this is Kamala, and I think it's time we got her name right, because she may very well be the next president. But this is going to be a fascinating 85 days, isn't it?
Yes, it is going to be, and I think that it amazes me that Trump isn't out there right now, but after he says he's going to be out there after the convention. So goodness, I really think it's going to be even a more flat out dash because of that, because we're not going to see anything till really the end of next week.
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure, Alex. Best to you. And let's talk again soon.
Okay, Jim.
Thank you. And we're joined from, I think it's still from Paris, Stephen Smith, who is a New Orleans attorney of renown. And he and his beautiful daughter, Annalisa, were covering in their own way the Olympics. It was a good 2 weeks for the Americans. The events closed last night, and the final total had China with 40 and the U.S. with 40, but the U.S. had more overall medals, 44 silvers, 42 bronze, 126, and China 27 silver, 24 bronze for 91. So, Stephen, I know you saw a good bit of it, and it was a spectacle that was certainly one for the ages. Everybody who I've known who's speaking about it says they had a great time in Paris, and of course they're proud that our country did so well.
It was a wonderful time, and for me it was incredibly special because I was with my my daughter who recently graduated from undergrad, so it was a graduation gift to her. That's where she wanted to go, so we got to spend a great amount of time in a wonderful, beautiful city, and we saw a lot of great events.
What were some of the events you really liked?
So we started with fencing on the first day we got there, and we were at fencing because one of the girls who was competing on the U.S. foil team named Lauren Scruggs is, my daughter knows her through another friend. So it was a personal thing for us. So we went there, and we as soon as we landed, we went to the fencing competition, which was in a small venue, and it was incredibly exciting for the opening rounds. And then the U.S. made it to the semifinal rounds of the knockout stages and ended up, it was a team foil event, and they ended up winning the gold medal. So it was an amazing feeling of accomplishment to be there cheering for Lauren Scruggs and the U.S. team as they won the gold medal because there was a personal connection. We went to two men's soccer games, the U.S. men playing Morocco, the U.S. women playing Japan, and then we saw Morocco and Spain in a men's game in Marseille, and Spain and Brazil playing in Marseille. Both of those were semifinal games. So mm-hmm. just a lot of we saw some basketball as well. We saw a volleyball match.
Saw a lot. And I think I saw you. I think on television. Was that your face?
That was my face, and it was just one of those things that happens when we got our tickets to the semifinal volleyball match. We did not know who was going to be in that match, and we walked into the arena. We still had not checked because we had just gotten back from Marseille, and we walked in, and lo and behold, it was the United States, and we ended up having pretty good seats. And yeah, my phone started ringing and beeping incessantly. And when I looked to check it, I found out that I was prominently featured on NBC Sports cheering for the United States women's volleyball team.
Rather enthusiastically, I might add, too.
yeah, it was incredibly exciting. It went to five sets, and the U.S. won in the fifth set. I think it was 15-11 in the last game. So they split the four other sets, and they won the match. Unfortunately, they did lose in the gold medal match to Italy. But you know what we saw was great volleyball, and the Brazilian team that they were playing is a world power, so it was quite a big win for the U.S. women's volleyball team.
Well, the next one's in Los Angeles, remember 1984, uh-huh. but that should be one for the ages as well. But how are the streets of Paris over the last few weeks?
It was, you know, the city was beautiful, and it was very clean. It was a safe environment. I don't know if you've ever been to Paris, but on it seems like every street corner and every block, there's just cafe after cafe and restaurant after restaurant. Almost it seems as if the first floor of every building is predominantly restaurants.
Part of the charm, yeah. Yeah, it's a great city.
And everything that we ate was fabulous. You know, pastries for breakfast in the morning, lunch, sandwiches.
Well, you're going to have to work out some, but Stephen, glad you had a great time. Thanks for sharing, and let's talk again soon.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Back tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay tuned.